This is 91.5 FM, WOBC, Oberlin College and Community Radio. I am Mike the DJ, and my show is The Fluturist Now, where I feature diverse flute players and interviews with and the music of, or in some cases, the music that they selected. I probably say every week that my very special guest is this person or that person, but this is truly a case of this being my very special guest, Amanda Dame, because Amanda is my flute teacher. So we'll be hearing an interview with Amanda as well as some music performed by Amanda. I hope you enjoy.
So my name is Amanda Dame. I have the pleasure of teaching Mike. He's been taking lessons with me for about 5 years. I recently finished a master's degree at Peabody in Baltimore, so that is where I'm based. And I am a private flute teacher, a special educator, and I play with a flute and percussion duo called Duocela.
What are some of your earliest musical memories or experiences?
Earliest musical experiences. Well, my mom is an orchestra teacher, so I would hear her playing, she would practice violin and stuff at home, and I wanted to be like her, so I picked up violin when I was really little, and I was doing Suzuki violin, and unfortunately really didn't like it. I don't have that many memories from that time, but my mom can attest that she had to tell me to practice. I wouldn't just do it myself. And And besides hearing her practice, I would go into school a lot and I would hear her rehearsing with her orchestra and see her interacting with the students. And I just thought it all seemed really fun. So I think she's probably the person who is responsible for introducing me to the world of music.
When did you start playing the flute?
I picked it up in fourth grade, so I think I was 9. Mm-hmm. Kind of at the same time that everyone else did at school. That's when you could start being in band. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when I started the flute.
What made you choose the flute?
Well, my mom had told me. Well, what ended up happening was I had a neck injury in third grade. And stopped playing violin then. I also coincidentally didn't like it very much. But she told me, the flute is also a treble instrument. It's high-pitched and gets to play the melody a lot. So it's kind of similar to violin in that way. And I also, we had a little musical petting zoo. We tried out all the different instruments. And I just loved what it felt like to play the flute. And it was really exciting. I didn't want to put a reed in my mouth. That was something that was kind of grossing me out at the time. So I was like, but the flute, you don't really have to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Then once you started playing, how does your musical education progress from there?
So I started playing in band in fourth grade. I loved it. I was very excited every time we had a group lesson or band. Anytime I got to take my flute out and it was all like nice and shiny and the case was all new, it was super exciting. And I started taking private lessons in fifth grade, I think it was fifth grade. And then it just continued. I always stayed in a school ensemble and then took lessons outside of school. Then in high school, I started playing in community orchestras, a youth orchestra in the area. They had different ensembles, so I started out with their band and then moved up to orchestra and met a lot of people there that I actually have stayed friends with through college, and they've majored in music too, and some of them have gotten to play with again at Oberlin, so that's been really fun.
Yeah, that must be pretty cool to have that long-standing of a relationship with someone. At what point did you decide that this was for you, that music was going to be the path that you wanted to take?
Well, it's always been something that I really love doing. I love playing and performing. And playing music with others. I did explore the idea of a different career path because there's the concern about making money as a musician. So I did a double degree during my undergrad. The idea was that would allow me different options and I could really be sure that, one or the other was the way I wanted to go. Ultimately, I broke my arm one semester, my junior year. I was still undecided at that point and took a semester off from playing. And I was pretty sad. I really missed it. So after that, I was like, well, that made the decision easy. And I just went with music for my graduate degree.
Excellent. What was your other degree in?
I was in biology.
Okay. Cool. What are some of your fondest memories of Oberlin?
Well, working with Alexa, Alexa still is the flute teacher there. She created a really wonderful and supportive community, the flute studio. We did lots of fun things together, like studio dinners and hangouts, and even after studio class, we would often like go out for coffee afterwards and just be able to pester her with questions. And I hope she liked it. We definitely enjoyed it. just getting more time with the professors there. And aside from her, a lot of other, basically all the other teachers on campus were really willing and able to be involved with students. Like they were constantly available. Well, maybe not constantly available, but very free. Like they had office hours, they responded to emails, they actually taught us. And that's something you don't get at other colleges. A bigger school, you might have a doctoral student teaching your class. You might not really get to work so closely with a professor until you do a graduate degree in research and be in their lab. And this was like we were in every teacher's lab with them. So pretty much any direction you wanted to go in, you could do that and just and get the help and support right from the professor.
Excellent. Then you moved on to Peabody. How was that?
Oh, Peabody was great. It was a big change for me. Mostly because Oberlin is a very unique school, as I kind of just hinted at. Like the professors are all very involved, easily reachable. It's a small town. Everyone knows one another. Everyone kind of does the same thing, eats at the same places. It's its own little bubble. And Peabody's like smack dab in the middle of downtown Baltimore. And if you just go to Peabody, you don't really get the full experience of what it's like to be a student there. Because in order to get really more opportunities, more interactions with professionals and stuff, you have to kind of be willing to put yourself out there and get involved in the community. So that was a different feel for me. And I enjoyed doing it because I was like, oh, this is great. It's kind of a way for me to start making money as a musician. I could get started while I'm at school and get more performing opportunities as a result, and then be in a better place when I'm out of school. So yeah, that being in a city was a great thing for me, I feel. And I studied with Marina Piccinini at Peabody, and she's a fantastic teacher, very inspiring. She expects a lot from her students and also created a really wonderful supportive community. And she also really pushed us and encouraged us to push one another, which was an interesting change for me as well, that competitive nature, competitive but friendly and supportive. It often felt like we all were kind of at the same level. It wasn't like a few people were kind of better than everyone else all the time. Like we all needed to improve in our own ways, and we were able to kind of seek help and support from each other with that. We had group lessons too that also contributed to that supportive atmosphere. Yeah.
What are some of your most memorable musical experiences?
Well, my first recital that was paid, that wasn't a school recital, was that was very memorable to me. It was a I had won a kind of a local woodwind competition, and then been talking with the people who organized it, and they were like, "Oh, sometimes we have a singer play sing at this venue," and I was like, "I want to play at that venue." And they asked me to do a Christmas recital that was all by American composers and for flute and piano. So that was a very unique challenge. I had to find Christmas music for flute and piano. Oh, sorry, I'm getting a weird call. For flute and piano, and that doesn't really exist. I mean, unless I arranged it all myself. And they also wanted it to be classical music. So it was Classical Holiday by American composers. So I ended up just digging and digging and finding these new composers I'd never heard of before, and throwing together this program that was kind of a mishmash of different American things and making it feel like a holiday recital. And it was a big challenge, and then it was a beautiful place to play in, and it was kind of my first time putting myself out there in the general public and doing a show. So yeah, I'll never forget that.
Now, a couple projects I know that you've been in. You played a duet with a classical guitarist, Second Ceremony, and currently you are in a duo with a percussionist, Duosilla. Do you care to comment on either of those two ensembles?
Sure, yeah. This was kind of another way for while I was at Peabody to get involved in both chamber music and community performance. So I played with Zachary Grimm, who's the guitarist. We played together for about a year and did a lot of little recitals and some background music gigs too in the area, and that was fun. It was very fun. It's a very fun experience to be doing chamber music and have to actually perform and get paid for it versus just doing chamber music for a credit at school. And when you live in a city or just in a place where there are places to perform in the community, you can kind of do both at once. But yeah, I play primarily with Duosilla now, flute and percussion duo. And we recorded an album this year. So I've been doing performances with my percussion friend, Christina Mancior, which stopped in March. Luckily, we were recording an album in the beginning of March and finished kind of just in time, like a week before they shut down everything. So throughout the pandemic, we've been editing, mixing, and now we're in the mastering stage of releasing that album and working on album artwork. And it's been a really good bonding experience for the two of us to kind of go through that process together. And it's interesting because you don't have to be rehearsing all the time to play better with someone. It's more of a personal relationship too. If you get to know one another really well, if you're really good friends, it can help that relationship, I think, almost just as much as rehearsing does.
Interesting. What selections can we expect to hear on your recording?
Well, the first thing is this beautiful piece. It's called Kembang Suling by Gareth Farr. That is a piece that Alexa still actually commissioned, and I think I had heard a recording of her playing it, and I was like, it's so cool. I have to play this piece. That's for flute and marimba. Another piece is the Piazzolla Tango Etudes. Those are written for solo flute. I think, yeah, and I think it was last year, Etude of the Week was kind of playing them. Etude of the Week is a Facebook group, in case people haven't heard of it before, where flute players play different etudes and kind of support each other. It's like an online studio. They're doing Piazzolla Etudes, and I had just started kind of rehearsing with Christina, and she was like, oh, I can just play a cajon with this. So we arranged the etudes for flute and cajon, recorded those. We also have a piece called Ariadne by Lou Harrison. That's a multi-percussion work and has some improvisation in it as well. And then lastly, we have Debussy Clair de Lune, which we arranged for flute and vibraphone. And we actually self-published our arrangement of it too. So that's fun. That's coming out kind of the same time as the album. Love the arrangement. It, to me, the vibraphone and the flute go great together. They're both very vibrant, resonant metal instruments. And it kind of sounds, I think, like a music box, one of those like little music boxes that you have to wind up and then it like makes a twinkling sound. And yeah. So that's the album. It's called Traditions Reimagined. Kind of a mishmash of different things.
When can we expect to see that?
That should be out. We don't have an exact release date yet, but it's going to be mid to late January.
Okay. Well, that's exciting. I can't wait. Can't wait to hear that one.
Borgen Project. Did you know that staff members of congressional leaders' offices often keep a weekly running tally of the issues that their constituents are calling or emailing about? The issues that garner the most attention often lead to leaders following up and co-sponsoring bills. The Borgen Project is a national nonprofit organization that lobbies to end extreme global poverty. Our mission is to make global poverty reduction a focus of U.S. foreign policy, because we all do better when we all do better. You can make a 30-second phone call to your representatives by visiting our website, borgenproject.org. That's B-O-R-G-E-N project.org.
This is 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. I am Mike the DJ, and the name of my show is The Fluture Is Now. This week, my very special guest is Amanda Dame. And up next, we're going to hear Amanda play the Bach Flute Sonata in B minor. Following that, we'll be back to interview. I hope you enjoy.
Thank you.
free children's coats from the Lorain County Community Action Agency. No one in the county should go without a coat if we can help it. Coats are now available to anyone in Lorain County living at or below 200% of the federal poverty level. Go to lccaa.net/programs/operation_warm to complete a coat request. Proof of eligibility will be required. All pickups will be contactless. Parents are encouraged to order the next size up to ensure the coats fit. Questions should be directed to Amy Steele at 440-204-3121 or email her at astele@lccaa.net.
This is 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. I am Mike the DJ, and my show is The Future Is Now, and my guest this week is Amanda Dame. Prior to the PSA, we heard Amanda Dame playing the Bach Flute Sonata in B minor. Now, back to the interview.
What advice would you have for music students? People, like, let's say if you could go back and give your own self advice 10 years ago, what advice would that be?
I think, so that advice would be, don't just practice all the time. 10 years ago, how old was I? 16. I was starting to get ready for college. And mm-hmm. I remember, you know, the pressure that students are under is intense. You have to get into a really good school. You have to get really good grades at that school. You have to do really good performances. Everything has to be perfect. But what I've learned is that the general public doesn't really care if you like miss a note in your run. So think about it. If you're spending 6, 8, 10 hours a week practicing that run and it's frustrating you, maybe look at the bigger picture. Otherwise you can grow. I think that advice I would give myself is to, yes, practice is important. Practice as much as you can, but don't over practice because you still have to be a human being that, you know, has friendships, has relationships, has failures, has family, does interesting things, has other jobs, not just somebody who sits in a practice room and drills stuff. So make sure that you allow yourself those other experiences outside of your music because they can really inform what you do with music. And ultimately they're going to have to because you're going to have to support yourself one day and make what you do meaningful to you, not just to your teacher.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you faced any obstacles throughout your musical career?
Oh yeah, definitely. Tons of them. I've gotten tons of rejection letters. I've failed at 1,000 auditions, not 1,000, but it feels like it. I think the biggest obstacle for me was, well, two. One obstacle was when I was having wrist problems when I first started my master's. For some reason, maybe I was practicing more than usual and handling a different type of load, but like, just the tinnitus, tendonitis in both my wrists. And that's an obstacle that many musicians deal with. That, which got better with physical therapy. If you're having any hand pain, I recommend seeking out a physical therapist. Another obstacle was the orchestra audition. So for a long time, I really wanted to play in a professional orchestra. And just do that with my career. But these things are competitive and hundreds of people audition for one job. So it was really hard for me to justify, you know, flying to a new city and doing an audition and then not getting the job. It, after a while, it just started to really crush me. And I really really admire people who keep at it, because that's what you got to do. You got to keep at it with the auditions. And eventually something works out in your favor. You're being true to yourself and you're working hard. But yeah, I wasn't doing so well with auditions, and it forced me to take a step back and really examine, like, you know, why is this not fulfilling me? And ultimately I decided it really wasn't what I wanted to do, and it was hard for me to put in that effort. So I had to figure out where I wanted to go with music, and the community involvement that I was able to have while at Peabody and the teaching experience I got while at Peabody were great things that informed me of other things I like. So I love teaching. I love working with special ed kids. I love working with in chamber music groups and doing these smaller community performances. So that's kind of where I've gone, and I feel happy with what I'm doing with music so far, and excited to see where it goes.
What are some of your other interests besides music?
I really like baking and cooking. The baking is definitely something I like to do in my free time if I have enough people to eat whatever I bake. I enjoy hiking and going on trips or adventures to seeing new places, meeting new people. What else? I like to do puzzles. I like to read. I'm a chronic Netflix binger. So I'll do that sometimes. I recently had a Harry Potter movie marathon.
I was going to ask you, what's your latest Netflix binge?
My latest Netflix binge was The Queen's Gambit.
Okay.
It's, is it British? I don't think it's a British show. One of the actors who plays Dudley Dursley in the Harry Potter movies is in it. It's about a lady who is a chess player. It's very good. Yeah, I recommend it.
Okay.
Yeah, so that would be my latest Netflix binge.
Awesome. Obviously, I'm sure that COVID has had a big effect on your art and your work. You mentioned in some respects how it's had an impact. Do you see it having an impact even after things do settle back to normal? Do you think that this is going to change the landscape of music?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very long time before we're back to, you know, doing a show where everyone gets together and rehearses a bunch of times and then does a performance where a whole bunch of people come. So every aspect of that process involves being with people, being in large numbers. And coupled with that, I mean, even when we have a vaccine, we've lost some infrastructure and funding that we had before. Venues are closing down. Arts programs are hurting for money. And I think it's just going to be a little bit of a process to rebuild all of that. And I'm sure we can, but it's not, I don't think it's going to be easy. And I think that for people who might be kind of desperately waiting for things to get back to normal, it might not happen in January or, you know, in a couple months when people start taking the vaccine and stuff. It's a process. But I don't think it's going to die. I think the world has changed a little bit. I think that people will be recording a lot more than they used to. There will be probably more interesting advertisements happening. We might be reaching potential audiences and on different platforms than we were before. And I think as a whole, the music industry will just be digitized more, have more of an online presence in every way it can.
Interesting. Besides your upcoming album, do you have any other future projects in mind?
Yeah, I'm working on, I would really like to start a sensory friendly concert series. I work at a school for high schoolers with mental and emotional behavioral disorders. Mm-hmm. And the music that they do in school really seems to help them. It's the act of learning an instrument or writing a song and performing it is therapeutic and can boost one's self-esteem, and you can learn collaboration skills and mm-hmm. learn more about the world. It's a great, music's a great thing for all students to learn. And I think that there are a lot of schools out there for special needs kids that don't have enough music programming. So I would like to create more of that. And, you know, the sensory friendly concerts are kind of a way to step into that, a way to just expose kids to music in a way that's comfortable for them.
Can you describe what a sensory friendly concert is?
Yeah, sensory friendly concert, it's a little bit of a general term, and it kind of, to me, it's a concert that isn't done in the traditional sense. So traditionally what we do, at least as classical performers, is we get up on stage, don't say anything, usually play a full hour long program and then leave. That's a pretty standard structure. Mm-hmm. Not that it's a bad thing, but we all have different personalities and levels of intelligence and areas of intelligence. And for a lot of people, that type of programming is just it excludes them. Mm-hmm. They don't pick up on whatever's going on. They feel forced to enjoy it. They feel like maybe they don't understand what's going on and they're at a disadvantage and they shouldn't even be there in the first place. And then you can throw in disabilities into the mix. Some people like just won't be able to handle it because it'll be too loud. But if they put noise canceling headphones on, people will look at them and be like, you're crazy and you're rude.
Right.
Things like that. A person might be blind and can't read the program. So sensory friendly is kind of encompasses whatever you can do to make your program more accessible to more people. So talking in between performances, having an art slideshow accompanied with your performance, and maybe you relate what you're doing to that art show. So people who know more about art can appreciate the music more than if you hadn't done that. Mm. Maybe you have certain listening devices for people who are either hard of hearing or hear too much. Maybe you invite people on stage with you to view the presentation from the stage instead of sitting in the audience. Mm-hmm. Maybe you let people sit wherever they want. Maybe you let people talk during the performance. Mm-hmm. Maybe you move around and interact with people while you're performing. And to me, sensory friendly really depends on who you're presenting for. Mm-hmm. Getting to know your audience either in real time or before. If you're able to take some sort of survey, for example, if people are to RSVP, they could tell you about themselves. That's just as an example.
Right.
But yeah, more of that, more accessible classical music for more students is what I'm hoping to achieve. It's a little weird now that everything's virtual. So right. That's something I'm navigating, is how to get started.
Right. Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you have any final words for my audience?
I guess if you're a musician, get out there and play more. People want to hear it. People want to hear live music, whether you feel like it's good or it's bad. Mm-hmm. It's live music that you care about. So people want to hear it. Record yourself. Look out if you're not a musician and you like listening to music. Check out more artists. A lot of artists are doing really interesting things during the pandemic, and just kind of see what they're up to. I think that's the best way we can support them, not by showering them with money. I mean, that's obviously nice, but not by buying their content. That's all great and necessary, but I think what's most important is just the awareness of what they're doing and telling people about it, spreading the ideas, spreading the word about what these artists are doing. So when we're out of the pandemic, we all have like a bigger following, I guess, of people just knowing what we're up to and being interested in it. Because that's very valuable, just people being interested in what you're doing.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you so much for consenting to be interviewed and for your wonderful insights. Take care.
You as well. Thanks for having me.
All right.
This is 91.5 FM, WOBC, Oberlin College, and Community Radio. I am Mike the DJ. The name of my show is The Future Is Now. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Amanda Dame. Up next, we're going to have a performance by Amanda and Amanda's duet, Duo Sila. And they'll be playing the Piazzolla Tango Etude No. 1 for flute and cajon. I hope you enjoy. Thank you. This is 91.5 FM, WOBC, Oberlin College and Community Radio. We just heard Emmanuel Pahoud performing Poulenc's Flute Sonata, the second movement, and before that we heard Duo Sila, featuring Amanda Dame, playing Piazzolla's Tango Etude 1 for flute and cajon. This is WOBC 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. I am Mike the DJ. The name of my show is The Fluture Is Now. I hope you enjoyed this week with Amanda Dame. Stay tuned next week as I will have another interview with another fine flutist. Until next week, take care of yourself, and remember, always happy fluting.